a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Warrant also include all of your electronic devices, PDAs, laptops, and so on. We wouldn't want any interruptions during the course of our meeting. With that, I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Dielstra.
Here.
Vargin. Greenfield. Holly.
Here.
Hubble.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Kirschman.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Nordstrup.
Here.
Willitson.
Here.
Consett.
Here.
And Solem. We have
here.
A quorum.
We have a quorum with a majority of the members-elect present. I'm certain you all have had the opportunity to review the minutes of our last meeting. With that, I'd entertain a motion for approval. Motion for approval by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Consett. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. At this time, I would like our pages to come up to the microphone and introduce themselves. They've been with, this is your last week with us, is that correct? So a couple days left. Introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
My name is JC Denner and I'm from Aberdeen.
Good, thank you.
I'm Andrea Paulson and I'm from Clark.
Thank you. And a reminder, should any of those of you that are going to testify, if you have any handouts or anything you'd like to distribute it to the committee, our pages are here to help you with that process, and thanks for their help. Now, as a reminder to both the committee members and those that are testifying, all questions will come through the chair. I would appreciate that. So it's time to get down to business. We will now open the hearing on House Bill 1085, which is an act to prohibit certain political advertising in highway rights of way. I'll now open up for proponent testimony on House Bill 1085.
Good morning, sir, the chairman.
So good morning, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, good morning, members of the House Commerce and Energy Committee. My name is Stace Nelson. I'm the duly appointed, one of the duly appointed representatives from District 25, which encompasses the Hanson, McCook, and northern and western parts of Minnehaha County. This morning I come before you with House Bill number 1085. It is accompanied by a friendly amendment from the Secretary of the State's office that I would like to ask the chairman the permission to provide.
Has that been distributed?
Not yet, sir. I was waiting for your permission.
Oh, please.
Ladies. May I continue, sir?
Yes, please continue.
This bill that before you today is current South Dakota statute in regards to signage in the public right-of-way. Throughout the state of South Dakota, it is pretty well generally accepted, especially by the Department of Transportation here in the state of South Dakota, that the public right-of-way is exactly that, the public right-of-way. Just as you would not build a log cabin in the ditch of I-90, it's inappropriate to place any personal advertising, anything that you would be so inclined to put there if it's not in the benefit of the state or does not comply with regulations, it's not supposed to be there. The changes to the statute come they come because there are certain people in the state of South Dakota that have chosen to interpret the statute not to include campaign signage in certain counties in our great state. Those of us that had the opportunity to be in the Minnehaha area during the election saw a proliferation of campaign signage in the public right-of-way to the extent that the vaunted Argus leader made many references to it in a very derisive fashion. When candidates put their campaign signs in the public right-of-way, it demeans all of us. That is the public's domain, and campaign signs are not appropriate to be there. In interacting with some of the officials that have the authority to deal with this problem, they indicated they interpreted the law not to include campaign signage. The state of South Dakota Department of Transportation and the federal government has no such quandary. They understand this statute to include campaign signage. Problem was, in certain locales, they chose to interpret differently. This bill right here would clean up the statute so that it explicitly prohibits such conduct in the public right-of-way. The friendly amendment offered by the Secretary of State's office is definitely welcome. It adds a little bit of a bite to it for candidates so that they understand that such misconduct is also in violation of South Dakota Election Chapter 12-27. I stand by for questions, sir.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any other proponents? Any other proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Aaron Lorenzen, Secretary of State's Office, Director of Elections. With your permission, I'd like to speak to the bill and the amendment.
Yes, you may.
Our office comes in favor of the bill. Just a couple points here. Election codes reflect a wide area of regulations regarding elections and campaigns, and with this amendment, it simply ties currently what this bill would state and then also regulations to campaign finance laws. Currently, you can't fund campaigns with public money, so we shouldn't have to put signs on public property. And the amendment would further aid our office in the future to tie everything together with election codes. So we feel it's just simply a statement that solidifies campaign finance laws and solidifies what can be done with public property and campaign finances. Thank you. And I stand by for questions.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1085? Any opponents? Seeing none, I will open it up for committee questions. Representative Willits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a question for Mr. Renzen from the Secretary of State's office. On the amendment, sir, it says that you'd be in violation of Chapter 1227. I have no idea what 1227 is. Could you elaborate on that, please, and explain what it...
Absolutely. Mr. Chair.
Please.
Aaron Lorenzen, Secretary of State's office. 1227 is purely the title of law that deals with campaign finance. So Title 12 is all elections. 27 specifically is campaign finance. We feel with this amendment that campaign finance, it falls under that structure of must report of signs and have disclosures on it. So we feel it fits best into the campaign finance location of the election law.
Thank you.
Any follow-up, Representative?
No, thanks.
Any other questions? Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the sponsor, please. The question I have is concerning the violation of this as a Class 2 misdemeanor. I ran for office this last time, as all of us did, but my signs that I had for these campaigns were legally put, and they were also illegally taken away. And I had a lot of signs that were missing. Under the campaign laws, which we're going to probably vote on this thing, am I going to have to pay this penalty under this Class 2 misdemeanor if somebody takes my sign and puts it in an illegal place?
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Representative Nelson, District 25. This statute is no different than any other type of statute in the state of South Dakota. If such occurrence was to occur, it would be, if a complaint was filed with the local police department, it had to be addressed with the local police department, investigated, and if there was criminal misconduct, then I'm sure the state's attorney would address it. This specific law here already prohibits campaign signage or any other type of signage. We're just adding We're not changing circumstances. All we're doing is adding to make sure that people understand it does include political signage. You know, there's no way we can control every circumstance of whether somebody absconds with your signs and plants them in the public right away. There'd be indications if that was the case. Bottom line is if there's this gives the state the authority to remove those signs and also for candidates to understand that it's not appropriate. This specifically addresses a huge problem that we had in eastern South Dakota where candidates were ignoring the public right-of-way and placing their signs in the public right-of-way. If you travel along I-90, I-29, you can still see some of them on dead-end roads. That's the problem we're trying to address. Could such an occurrence occur? Possibly. As a law enforcement officer, there'd be indications of such malfeasance through forensic evidence. I don't think that a local law enforcement officer or state's attorney would prosecute without appropriate evidence. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yes, thank you. That's fine.
Chair. Representative Farge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Representative Nelson, I'm sorry I was gone, so this might have been touched upon before, I guess. And I might have a couple questions, sir. Underneath this, with the amendment and the bill, underneath this, would you report this to the authorities? Would you report it to Secretary of State, or do you report it to the DOT?
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Under this leaves a concerned citizen or an offended candidate, mm-hmm. basically all those options. What it also does, it empowers the local constabulary that has jurisdiction on this to take care of the problem forthwith. They do not have to wait. Matter of fact, compelled by the statute, if they see these signs in the public right away, they shall remove them. It takes out the error of interpretation. The public right away is relatively easy to find. There's numerous landmarks here in South Dakota, whether it's fence lines, whether it's telephone poles, that will indicate where the proper public right away is. But to answer your question, it allows all those folks as a recourse in these type of problems. If it's a persistent problem, if you were the offended candidate where your opponent was putting these in a public right away, you could report that to the Secretary of State and show that this is an ongoing problem and they could take action, or you could contact your local Department of Transportation, your county commissioners, point to the statute and say this is inappropriate, this is a misuse of public domain, and this is disadvantageous to yourself, and you could have recourse that way.
Follow-up, Representative?
Not right now, but I might in just a few moments.
Very good. Yes, Representative Kirschman.
For states, what is a Class 2 misdemeanor? How much is it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that information right at hand. I could take a look at the laptop and pull that up. I don't have it right on hand. And again, I'd like to indicate that this does not change the statute as a whole. This is simply clarifying for folks' edification, for them to understand that this is covered underneath the statute as far as the verbiage has been put in with the accompanying Secretary of State amendment.
Representative Willardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I happen to have the sheet here. A Class 2 misdemeanor is 30 days imprisonment or a $500 fine or both.
Do you carry that all the time, Representative, as a reminder of what?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Greenfield.
Wondering if Representative Willardson also has a thesaurus so that I know what he's been saying the last 10 minutes.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any other questions? Representative Fargin? Going once? Okay. With that, I will now close the public hearing portion on House Bill 1085 and open it up for committee discussion and or action. Representative Condon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important that we reiterate that the violation of this section is a Class 2 misdemeanor is already in statute. the representative who was bringing this bill is not increasing the penalty or changing the penalty in any way. So I fear for some of your campaigns because you might have committed a Class 2 misdemeanor.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Willitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move Amendment 1085 F.A.
The motion to move House Bill or Amendment 1085 F.A. Has been made by Representative Willitson, seconded by Representative Greenfield. Any comments? No comments. Seeing none, all those in favor of the Amendment 1085 F.A. will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 1085 has been amended. Now we're back to discussion on the House Bill 1085 as amended. And I am waiting for committee action. Representative Consett.
Mr. Chair, I move do pass.
Second.
The motion do pass on House Bill 1085 as amended by Representative Consett, seconded by Representative Jensen. Any discussion, Representative?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you bringing this piece of legislation.
Representative Hubble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate this this law because being a real estate agent, I am constantly worried about signage and where I place it to, and I just think that responsibility should fall on the political era also. Thank you.
Anything else? Seeing no further discussion, the question... Representative Fargin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry for the late reaction to it. I think, you know, what we have on the books now is good enough. I don't want to, make or, moving from may to shall with the DOT or the sheriff or the police or any other local authorities to make, going around checking signs. I think it's another burden on them at the local level, if they're going to go patrol it, or if they call it in, or however that is. I just don't see, just me alone, I have 500 political signs. I know people have multiple other ones, and for them to have to go around probably with a truck to take this out, more man hours on their half and everything. I think how it is now, how we police ourselves, and obviously it's a Class 2 misdemeanor now for us to follow the law and to make sure that this is upheld. I think we have to step up to the plate and make sure that we police ourselves on this and not put the nuisance to the DOT or local authorities to go around and pick up our signs if they're illegal. I think it's something that we have to do, or else we're going to get charged with a Class 2 misdemeanor. I don't want to put that back on to the local authorities or the DOT. So I'm going to be voting no on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Anyone else? Seeing no further discussion, the question at hand is do pass on House Bill 1085 as amended. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Dielstra.
Aye.
Fargin.
No.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Hawley.
Aye.
Hubble.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Kirschman.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Willitson.
No.
Consett?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
We have 10 yeas and 3 nays.
House Bill 1085, as amended, having received a majority of the vote from the members present, passes. Thank you to those that have testified. Appreciate that. Moving on with business. Let's back up. Representative Jones, would you carry this bill to your caucus? I would appreciate it. Thank you.
I can carry it. No, I'm joking. I was a no. I was joking.
As long as it gets brought up to your group, you guys can fight it over. Rank certainly has its privilege, Representative. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jones.
Where is this responsibility?
Where
is it with Representative Hargin?
Oh, no, by no means. I was just making a joke. No, I was just making a joke. It was just,
Present,
no,
if you would
it's
be,
all on you, Representative Jones.
and it certainly looked like, being the distinguished gentleman that he is, he was trying to pull rank on you, Representative. So I think you guys can work that out. Appreciate it. On with business. We'll now open up the hearing on House Bill 1135, which is an act to require certification for operators of boilers in public buildings. Again, I'd ask the committee to hold all your questions until all of the testimony is taken. And with that, we will now hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1135.
Is this microphone on? Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commerce and Energy Committee. Representative Peggy Gibson, District 22, Beetle Hand and Girald Counties, and I'm from Huron. And House Bill 1135 is kind of a simple bill to require certification for operators of boilers in public buildings in the state of South Dakota. This is a constituent bill brought forth by members of the Custodial Engineers Association of South Dakota. Jim Schmidt, who will be testifying after I finish my introductory remarks here, is from Huron, and he invited me to come to Aberdeen to the convention of the Custodial Engineers Association. And they wanted to discuss steps to take in order to certify boiler operators in public buildings. Why should boiler operators be certified? Because boilers are dangerous machines to operate. They can injure persons, they can injure the operators, they can injure persons in the building if they're operated improperly. Thank you. Boiler accidents can occur at any time, even if safety precautions are followed. Boiler operators who are familiar with the equipment in a building and have knowledge of proper operation know how to react in emergency situations and save lives. However, those who don't have the proper training do not know how to operate that emergency equipment and save lives. With training and subsequent licensure, boiler operators can operate boilers efficiently and safely. And last but certainly not least, the members of the Custodial Engineers Association of South Dakota who operate boilers want to be trained and certified. They're asking for it. Our neighboring state of Minnesota has probably the most complete statutes for licensure and training requirements for boiler operators and certification, and it would not be particularly difficult to implement like rules and regulations into South Dakota law. So that is basically why I'm bringing you the bill. I'd like you to note on the internet here, Cheryl Stroh from Selby, South Dakota, wrote a very compelling letter about her experiences as a boiler operator, and when she took vacation, came back, and people had added water to the boiler, and it subsequently caused injury to her and significantly changed her life. And she writes here in synopsis, please let me know if I can do anything else. I cannot stress the importance of boiler operator certification and training. People do not realize that this is something that can't be taken lightly. I struggled so hard with the commissioners that we need to have someone knowledgeable in operating the boiler, but they insisted that they could take care of it. She ultimately paid the price. They were going down every day and adding water when she was on vacation for no rhyme nor reason. It was, she said it was their way to save money. And so it cost a horrible accident on her part. They did pay her medical bills, but it cost her her job. She no longer has health insurance. She hasn't been able to get back to work. In the meantime, her husband had a heart attack. Now they have a rider for him on their insurance, and times are tough. She operates in not being able to work for the county. Then she operates a restaurant. She did say that her children have graduated, so times are at least better that way, but it put her in a whirl of depression. It cost her family a lot, and she says she hopes and prays that this does not happen to someone else. I also want to bring up the custodian in Plankinton who also lost his life after a boiler explosion, and these incidents do happen around the state. So anyway, I have a group of people who are sincerely interested in public safety. They would just like to have access to some certification and training and licensure perhaps later on, but access to this, I don't think it's too much to ask of this committee to okay this bill. So that's why I bring 1135. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and I have a couple of people who would like to testify here today, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any other proponents to House Bill 1135? Please come up, identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yes, my name is James Schmidt, and I'm from here in South Dakota. And I am testifying on my own behalf right now, and I would like to present my testimony.
Certainly. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. When I first worked for the county in Huron, I got a job as a custodial maintenance individual, and I was told, basically, that and shown my responsibilities. Well, they took me down into the basement, showed me this big monster down there, and told me that was part of my duties. I was not prepared for that. I was shocked. I'd never been around boilers in my life. And it scared me, and for good reason. So I wondered, what can I do? I heard about the Custodial Engineering Association, that they do some training and stuff, and I more or less got a hold of them, and I got training. While I was there, my hair really stood up on end. I saw pictures of mishandled boilers, well, what was left. I saw pictures of leveled buildings, body counts, things that just, I mean, I had a hard time sleeping the first night I saw that. And most of the time, when a guy like me makes a mistake, it'll be the last mistake I ever make, because I wouldn't even know it. And who knows how many people I would take with me. That really, really scared me. So I studied, and I got certified. It did not cost me a lot to get certified, you know, a bare minimum. And anyway, because of it, when I went back after that workshop and I looked at that monster, it was not such a monster anymore. I began to understand what made it tick. First of all, I learned what to do in case of an emergency. If I walked down in that boiler room and it was glowing red, red hot, which on occasions they will, not normally, but it has happened, I know what the very first thing to do is. It's not add water. You add one drop of water, and that's your last mistake. And who knows? I have friends upstairs and everything, you know. I would take them with me with my mistake. It's basically to shut the power off. You know, a lot of these aren't rocket science things. They're common sense things, but they're things that not everybody knows. When I was in class, I had a young lady, she more or less says, oh, you have to add chemical to those things? We all looked at each other, say, well, yes, because that's a disaster waiting for happening. I had people testify or mention to me who wouldn't testify to hear anything because they fear their jobs. And some of them had close mishaps, but they wouldn't dare because they don't want to lose their job. So they're afraid to testify. Well, I'm semi-retired now, and I don't have to worry about that. But the thing is, other people have faced the same thing as I have come before and looked at this monster and not known what to do. Can you imagine if we had the same thing with a janitor goes into a school and it says part of your duties is being a bus driver? Well, I've never driven a bus before. Well, that's okay. You'll catch on. You know? No, we don't do that because we value the kids in the bus, the people that are traveling with us. There's a value there, so we make those people get a license and learn how to drive that bus safely. Well, this is the same thing with boilers. Basically, we want these people to have the knowledge to run that boiler safely and to be able to maintain it safely. There's a few things you got to do with that boiler in order to be able to make sure that it stays safe. One of the main things I think about, and I watch and I pray regularly, that something could be put in place. We have been pretty fortunate in this state to never see a catastrophe, you know? Not like other states. Other states have actually seen catastrophes, you know, and I've seen the pictures. And I hope it never happens here in this state, because it would make our hearts sink. Our custodians all around and everything, if they survive it and they live, they for the rest of their lives, they got to live with the fact that they probably didn't do something right and kill people. If they don't live, well, then the family has that burden. I wish that we could move on a bill, or this bill, so that we don't have to name a bill after a school or a public place or people. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions?
We'll come to questions in a few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other proponents? Any other proponents to House Bill 1135?
Good morning. My name is Jim Coates. I'm from Custer. I'm here to testify for myself and this Custodial Engineers Association. And Mr. Smith and Mrs. Gibson's pretty much covered everything. And I just want to say, I don't think we should wait till one of these boilers blow up to decide to do something. I've been running boilers for 26 years now. And when I first started, I was taken to the boiler room and said, there you go. Run it. It's scary. I didn't know what I was getting into until I started going to classes on boilers and found out just how dangerous they can be. And they can do a lot of damage when they blow. So that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Any other proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1135?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Christy Honeywell. I'm the state engineer in the Bureau of Administration, and I'm here today in opposition of 1135. First, I would like to say We, of course, are concerned about boiler operator safety also. In fact, the Department of Public Safety currently has a boiler inspection program in place to ensure boilers are safe. Either the state fire marshal contractors or insurance provider contractors inspect approximately 10,000 boilers in the state every 2 years. If this bill passes, this new certification program would need to include certification and enforcement for all boiler operators and could potentially involve several trades, including electricians, plumbers, HVAC operators, without adequate additional funding. Just something to remember, when new boilers are installed, the installers and the suppliers will conduct training to those operators at the time of installation as part of their warranty programs. Building owners can always provide training for new employees on a voluntary basis. This bill would require every owner of a public building, including the state, cities, counties, and school districts, to incur the cost of training and certification of their boiler operators. If we assume we have 10,000 boilers and at $50 per certificate, that's a $500,000 statewide. We believe this bill is an unnecessary regulatory mandate that increases the financial burden to the state, local governments, and school districts, and I respectively ask you to defeat this bill. And I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Are there any other opponents, to House Bill 1135? Any other opponents? Seeing none, at this time I will open it up for committee questions. Any questions? Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. I think it's probably for Ms. Honeywell. Ma'am, one thing that I've learned over the years is that words mean something, and it strikes me that we just passed a law in the state of South Dakota that defines even some private entities as public places. And my question is, in those buildings, would boiler operators be subject to such certification under this bill as well?
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Representative Greenfield, I'm not exactly sure about that because the public buildings isn't defined in this particular section of the statute.
Okay. Follow up?
No, thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller. Oh.
Ms. Honeywell, what was that figure that you used? How many did you? 10,000?
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Approximately 10,000 boilers are inspected every 2 years in the state.
Okay. Times $50.
$50 for their certificate. Assuming that each boiler operator, there would be one boiler operator per boiler.
Okay, and how much money did you say that was?
$500,000.
Wouldn't that be 250? Wouldn't that be?
10,000 times 50?
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay.
Any other questions?
No.
Representative Hawley.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ms. Honeywell, I got a couple questions, if I might. First off, to clarify that, you're talking 10,000 boilers, but that's 10,000 boilers that you inspect in the state, correct?
That's correct.
And that does include public and private boilers.
I have.
How many public boilers do you inspect?
Mr. Chairman,
please.
I would probably defer that question to the Department of Public Safety, but I have asked them if they could give me a breakout of how many private and public, and they don't have that in their database. They did tell me they assume the majority of those would be publicly owned schools and cities and governments.
Okay. I have a steam boiler in my building, and when I've tried to get them, when I've had problems, they're off at other places, and a lot of times it was other private buildings we're at. Now, our schools do have them. The city has it, the county. I can come up with 10 or 12 boilers in Brookings, but a lot of them are in public entities, or private entities, I'm sorry. So the other portion is that I do have inspection every other year, and my inspector comes into my desk and says, I'm going to look at your boiler, and he goes and looks, and he certifies it and goes away.
no discussion of any operation of it, how I operate it, if I know how to operate it. So my understanding, was my inspector doing it wrong, or should he have been asking if I knew how to operate the boiler?
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
To be honest with you, I'm not sure how the Department of Public Safety would do their inspections, or if it's an, is it an insurance provider that provides that for you? I don't know that.
I had the state inspector do mine, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Konzik.
This is for the sponsor of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative?
You had stated in your opening testimony that you, with the current boiler training programs that are offered within the state of South Dakota, that you wanted everybody to have access to the program. Are people being denied access to those programs currently?
Mr. Chair.
Representative?
I just don't think they know about it, and they're not aware of the training programs that are available. And I just, you know, Ms. Honeywell said that the boilers are inspected, but as Representative Holly said, the boiler operators have no certification or training or licensure to operate them. So I see this as kind of a hole in the whole system, and I think they should, be trained and perhaps licensed.
Thank you. Any other questions? The chair has a question of the sponsor. You know, initially or face value, I'm all in favor of having some kind of training or certification of a boiler operator. There was a $500,000 dollar figure thrown out there, and that
is, so Mr. Is that what you pay the state to?
No, I think where that figure came up with was the $50 fee. Yeah, a fee not to exceed $50 as stated in your mm-hmm. bill, times the 10,000 boilers that are out there. I think that's where that number was
okay.
derived. However, with personal knowledge and in doing some further research, being a certified boiler operator isn't simply something you just go take a test for. So what would the other cost be to implementing the provisions of this statute?
Mr. Chairman, probably some classroom training and licensure fees, which would go back to the state to become licensed as a boiler operator. That's kind of what Minnesota has. And that was the pattern that this is just a basic bill to set up the program. And of course, the other rules would be probably promulgated through the interim rules committee to set up exactly. I mean, we have licensure and certification in other areas of state government, and this is just an addition to keep for public safety. So that would be established as we go. This is just the general outline of what my constituents are seeking.
And I certainly understand that, but your training in order to get certified, and looking at some of the Minnesota statutes and some other training programs that are available not only online but from various private entities, they're looking at 30 to 40 hours of instruction, and they talk about maintenance, safety, boiler theory, electrical fundamentals, motors. There are a lot of things that are included in that. So, you know, we're in order to get certified or get to the point where you can take that test, we're looking at a classroom experience of some kind.
Correct.
And obviously, in order to make a classroom space available and put an instructor up front, there are costs associated with that. Have you looked at what some of these programs cost in order to administer this type of training so we can get to the point where we pay the $50 fee and get licensed?
No, I have not yet. This is just the start of the legislation for certification.
Okay.
I realize, you know, I'm a teacher, so I realize there are other costs affiliated with, some of which I pay myself, and then some I pay to the state. So
certainly. And then finally, we played with that number of $50,000 times 10,000 boilers, which we're equating to 10,000 people operating those boilers. And say if a 30-hour course costs $500, all of a sudden we're looking at some very large dollars. Who's going to pay for it?
Probably the individuals, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right.
And then, licensure could be set up by the state or their employees. It's just a basic, you know, let's get the program started type of bill, and we go from there. And I use Minnesota as a basic background, and other than that, it's open.
Thank you. No, Representative Nostrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the sponsor. Do you know if, which I guess I just might have answered my own question, that if $50 will even cover the costs of the program? Because I see it says not to exceed $50, but is $50 enough to cover the program?
I don't know at this point, but it's a start.
Okay, and I have a follow-up question.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any examples of rules?
I do, from Minnesota.
Okay. Can we see those?
I'll give you a copy if you'd like.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Representative Fargent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just want to ask for a clarification. I know a comment you made, and I'm just going to ask. This is going only to public buildings, which 10,000 is from what the state does for public and private. So
yep.
This is just for public buildings.
Correct.
So it won't be 10,000 at the $50 charge. So just so it's not that big of a number. It's still probably large. I'm just trying to clarify. So it's not all 10,000.
No.
Duly noted. Thank you. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the sponsor as well.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your acquaintance, Ms. Stroh, I'm wondering whether she is a person who is registered or what have you to actually do the teaching of the courses to certify other individuals.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
Ms. Stroh was running a boiler and was injured.
Understood.
Follow up. Please, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I might clarify, I recognize that. I read the entirety of the letter. But my question is, does she also do training and certification of other boiler operators?
Mr. Chair?
Please.
No, she runs a restaurant after she was injured.
Representative Willetson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor, the second previous speaker made a statement about public buildings, but what's the definition of a public building?
Mr. Chair?
Representative?
That would be something that would need to be defined. I didn't do it at this juncture because this is just an introductory bill.
Thank you.
Follow up? Well, then it would seem to me that the way that the bill is written now, that a public building would include any building where the public is permitted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the 10,000 number is probably correct.
Could be.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Hubble.
Thank you for the sponsor. I I appreciate your heart for your constituents, and I can see where this is a big concern to a lot of people. I'm wondering, my question is that in a public building, is it like the foreman of that has the certification, and then he can teach the other operators, or would this be every single person who touches the boiler room has to be certified?
Mr. Chair?
Nope.
My understanding from the Custodial Engineering Association is just the person who is directly in charge of the boiler would have the certification, and then he or she teaches the others.
Any follow-up, Representative?
I just don't see that in the bill. I wish that was a little bit tighter in the bill then.
Any other questions? Seeing none. The chair now closes the public hearing portion on House Bill 1135 and open it up for committee discussion and or action. Representative Willardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move House Bill 1135 to the 41st day.
The motion is to move House Bill 1135 to the 41st legislative day, seconded by Representative Jensen. Any discussion? Representative Willardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I first read this bill, my first impression was is that this is a solution looking for a problem. As we've heard the testimony today and as it's gone along, I see a need for some training opportunities for the individuals that operate boilers. Make no mistake about it, boilers, as we've heard, is a very serious piece of machinery, and it should not be taken lightly. On the other hand, I think that we do have a lot of inspections in place and such, and the fact that when I stopped to think about the last time that I'd heard about a boiler accident in South Dakota, I couldn't think of one. Now, there's been a couple of them brought up here today, and I remember those. Being in the insurance business, it's something that you probably don't forget very quickly. I think that this particular bill is troublesome in that it's got some definition issues that need to be attended to. I think that it would also be something where we would need to work together with the Department of Public Safety and also, with the various engineering organizations to properly prepare something that we can work with and get everybody in agreement with. And so hopefully that will occur over the next year, so that next year we're working at it again and on a positive basis. So I'd encourage your support to the 41st day. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Representative Konzett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative and gentlemen that have come here to testify today, I like the idea of this bill. I really do when I first read it. My issue with this bill is that when we're issuing mandate, and I'm not sure that it's been fully thought out how much this is going to cost between certification, education classes, availability, that type of issue. I am going to support the motion of the 41st day, but I would like to see this again, but I would like it tightened up with better definitions, for example, what it entails a public building. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hawley.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm against deferring the bill. I was not aware of, so I read the bills for committee, that we were not already requiring people to be certified on boilers in South Dakota, and I'm kind of shocked. I just assumed they were because of I visit with our custodians out at the city of Brookings and at the schools, and they have been certified, and they've been trained, and they understand it, and I talked to them about my boiler I had. And so I just assumed it was a requirement. So it's not like this is going to be a brand new thing out there that people are doing. but I agree that we should make sure that everybody for a public building has it. I threw out earlier, I do have a steam boiler. I walked into it, and it was with the building I bought, and I'm the chief mechanic and bottle washer, so when the boiler has problems, I'm the one who went down and take care of it. And I've had several issues. I went down one time, and he mentioned the red, glowing, hot boiler. Well, I had that exact same thing happen, and I went down, and everybody's complaining, no heat in the building. I look, and I got a red, glowing, and I kind of panic, and I shut it off just because I didn't know what else to do, and then I went and called my tech, who I have so work with, and he says, you didn't add any water, did you? And I said, no, I didn't. And he says, by God, thank God, you'd have blown the whole place up. And it was just because I just never thought to add water, probably. So I had a couple instances. I had a boiler claim. You mentioned you're not aware of it. There's a reason that the insurance has broken boilers out aren't covered under your normal property coverage. There's a separate policy just for boilers, and they're excluded because they're so different, and there's such a risk factor, and there's such large claims when they happen is why boilers are broken out. So I think it's extremely important that all public buildings should have certified operators so we don't put other people at risk. Myself, not being a public building, under the definition in my mind, I wouldn't be required to meet it. So, and there's not going to be 10,000 requirement to get certified. We know that there's not 10,000 public buildings. So all the stuff thrown out isn't true. Let's get back to the facts and vote to protect the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a little bit of experience having worked at the Northern State University heating plant back when I was a student, and I did operate the boiler. And as I read this, I was curious as to whether that would have affected me. And sure enough, it obviously would have, because that was undoubtedly a public building. And as I read through, the reason I asked the question about Ms. Stroh's status is in terms of whether she was allowed to do training and certify folks, because she in her on the front page in probably about paragraph 6, it says that if the commissioners would have allowed me to hire and train someone to take care of the system, that would have helped to alleviate the problem. And then it goes on to say that they should also have, at minimum, some sort of training. And I guess my question is, was the training that I went through at Northern sufficient? I felt that it was. There's a difference between being trained by someone, who has hands-on experience and going through a certification process. I don't want to create hardships for... I understand this is a tragic situation that has gone on. Anybody who's been burned or worse by a boiler malfunction is certainly tragic, and I appreciate the sentiments that have been shared here today. But at the same time, when the very person who has written us a very lengthy letter suggests that one of the remedies is for her to go ahead and train somebody, as opposed to pursuing the certification route, I think that's something that we have to delineate. What is appropriate? What is proper? Is it for the main, the person who's generally in charge of operating the boiler, the person who is the main point person? Is it appropriate for them to do the training? Or what route do we pursue? And I think those are all questions that we need to take a look at. And as has been suggested here today, there is, we've addressed several issues that probably can be ironed out and be brought back in the future. It's not for lack of sensitivity to the issue, but more so for lack of detail in the bill, that I'm going to vote to defer it to the 41st day. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Seeing none, the question at hand is to refer House Bill 1135 to the 41st legislative day. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Dielstra.
Aye.
Fargin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Holly.
No.
Hubble.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Jones.
No.
Kirschman.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Willardson.
Aye.
Consett.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
10 yeas, 3 nays.
House Bill 1135 has been, with the majority of the vote of the members present, deferred to the 41st legislative day. While we're waiting for our committee to rearrange chairs, I think we're ready to go. Let's open up the hearing on House Bill 1174, which is an act to revise certain provisions concerning alcoholic beverage licenses issued at the county fairgrounds. We will now hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1174.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I am Representative Chris Consett, District 32, and I appreciate your time today. This was a bill that was brought to you last year, and it did pass into law. It's the tightening up of certain verbiage. What this is doing is it's stating if the fairgrounds are owned by the county issues the liquor license. If the fairgrounds are owned by the city oversees them. The city issues the liquor license. That's as basic as it gets. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any other proponents for House Bill 1174? Any other proponents? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1174? Any opponents? Seeing none, at this time I'll open it up for committee questions. Sure. Representative Fard.
Thank you, Representative. I guess the only question was there examples of this not working in the past, or was any disputes or anything, just a little history on it, I guess.
This has worked beautifully for all the county fairgrounds throughout the state except for Pennington County, where the city and the county were saying, you issue it. No, you issue it. You issue it. That basically is why I needed this clarified.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Hawley? No? Representative Willardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the language that we're changing, it says may issue one on-sale license. I'm just curious as far as why you chose one. What if there's, you know, two vendors that want to, you know, sell alcohol at a county fair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What happens here is the beverage license or the alcohol license is issued to the fairgrounds, and then they oversee how the distributors, with each vendor, that type of thing. But in this case, it is highly restricted and overseen. The reason that we only issued one is this was supposed to fill the same type of licensure that golf courses, the airport. One license was carved out.
Any other questions? Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, is this not akin to the bill that was brought last year?
It is the exact same bill.
Okay, so we're just trying to
tighten it up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dielstra, did you have a question? No? Any other questions? With that,
Mr. Chair, could I take a moment?
Representative Condit.
I would be remiss if I did not address the fact that I've let my mother into the Capitol today. I forbade her to come all of last year, and so I let her in today, and I just want to say thank you for coming, Eileen Fisher.
You're welcome. Done right in the midst of our legislative process. That was pretty smooth, Representative.
You did a good job.
Okay. Okay, I'll now close the public hearing portion on House Bill 1174 and open it up for committee discussion and or action. Representative Dielstra.
I move do pass.
Move the motion do pass on House Bill 1174 by Representative Dielstra, seconded by Representative Greenfield. Comments? Seeing none, seeing no further discussion, the question at hand is do pass on House Bill 1174. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Dielstra.
Aye.
Hargan.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Holly?
Aye.
Howell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Kirschman?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Willitson?
Aye.
Consett?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
13-0.
House Bill 1174 receives a due pass recommendation by the majority of the members present. Sure. Representative Jensen.
Second.
The motion to move 1174 to the consent calendar by Representative Jensen, seconded by Representative Greenfield. All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 1174 is now on the consent calendar. Thank you. We'll continue on with the last bill of the on the calendar for this morning, House Bill 1180, which is an act to revise and repeal an outdated provision regarding land surveying. We'll now open it up for proponent testimony. Representative Willitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Mark Willitson from District 11 in Sioux Falls. With House Bill 1180, this bill, I think, behooves us to take a look at one of our other duties in the legislature, and that's that when we have laws on the books that are, you know, outdated, obsolete, etc., that we need to take a look at those and to make the appropriate corrections. And that's exactly what this bill does. It takes some parts of our statute that have been in force for decades and talks about practices that have not been in use for decades and takes them out of our statute and makes the corrections and updates those. With that, I'm not going to create the sin of talking too much about my bill, and so I'm going to stand by for questions. We do have a professional that's here to testify also, and he'll touch on some of those issues too. So thank you, committee.
Thank you, Representative. Any other proponents to House Bill 1180? Proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Todd Colden, and I'm an administrator with the Department of Labor, and I'm here representing the department in support of this bill. In addition, the South Dakota Board of Technical Professions, which is attached to the Department of Labor, which also includes two land surveyors that serve on the board, they've reviewed the bill, and they wish to convey their support as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other proponents? Good morning, sir.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I just want to start out by thanking you guys for the job that you undertake.
Would you identify yourself?
Donald Jacobson. I'm a professional land surveyor. I live in Fort Pierce, South Dakota.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson.
I have been active in the Land Surveyor Society since 1985. The organization was started in 1984. We grew from about 20 members up to over 200 members now. For the last 5 years, we have been going through statute with our legislative committee, of which I was chairman of for numerous years. I am no longer chairman of that. I have been involved with the Design Professional Coalition, representing land surveyors on that coalition ever since we started, which was back in the early 80s. We've been going through a lot of these bills. A lot of this law, I think, was probably established when back in Dakota Territory time. When you sit down and review North Dakota statutes against South Dakota's, they're identical. So that kind of, some of us kind of believe that we haven't done much research, but it's probably been back to the Dakota Territory days. Basically, we wanted to change some stuff. As you see in there, it states that the owner of the property by himself or his agent would mark the corners. Well, as registered land surveyors, we are the ones that set the monuments. We put our name, our LS number on them, and we're liable for the accuracy of them. As you've read through here, at one time they used a carved stone. None of us have the ability to carve stones anymore. And then also cinder blocks or concrete monuments, which what we use nowadays are a rebar or a pipe, and we set a plastic cap or aluminum cap on that, which has our LS number and our names. And just, I guess, to make this go a little faster, I will just stand by for any questioning.
Thank you, sir. Any other proponents? Any other proponents to House Bill 1180? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1180? Any opponents? Seeing none, at this time I'll open it up for committee questions. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question for anybody who can answer it. Section 3, the last section of the bill, why is that language antiquated? Why is that no longer necessary?
Mr. Jacobs.
Mr. Chair.
Please.
When we took a look at this, for one thing, we do not have chainmen anymore. Our assistants are usually a tech, graduated from a tech school. They are called rodmen or GPS techs. Nobody has ever administered the oath that I'm aware of. I started in the profession in 1975. We used to joke about, what is it? You know, does anybody have a copy of it? And it's just something that goes back to the original survey. When the government land office contracted with the surveyor, part of his instructions was that he would administer an oath to the chainman. Back in those days, the chainman was a very important person of the survey crew. They were the ones that had to have the accurate measurements. Nowadays, starting in 1975 when I started, I still used a chain and a transit. And it was usually a three-legged thing that didn't have adjustable legs. It was very difficult to set up. When you see the surveyors working nowadays, they're usually standing there with a pole that's got a little antenna on it, and they're usually talking on their cell phone. We're doing satellite surveys nowadays. There's still times that we go back to pulling a chain, but most people just don't do it. Nobody's ever administered it, so we just thought it was something that we could clean up, get it off there.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other question? Any other questions? Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing portion on House Bill 1180 and open it up for committee discussion and or action. Representative Miller.
I move that we do pass.
The motion do pass on House Bill 1180 by Representative Miller, seconded by Representative Nostrup. Any comments? Okay. Seeing none, the question at hand is do pass on House Bill 1180. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Dielstra.
Aye.
Fargin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Hawley.
Aye.
Hubbell.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Willitson.
Aye.
Consett.
Aye.
And Solem.
Aye.
13-0. 13-8.
House Bill 1180, having received a majority of the vote from the members present, passes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dielstra.
I move consent.
The motion to move House Bill 1180 to the consent calendar by Representative Dielstra, seconded by Representative Greenfield. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 1180 is on the consent calendar. That can...
I said to him, have you spoken on the floor yet?
Very good. This concludes our business for the House Commerce and Energy Committee for today.
Chair.
The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chair, move to adjourn.
Representative Consett moves to adjourn. Second by Representative Greenfield. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.